Hey there, my friends. We have come to the next item, that is Dhamma Sermon, and here we are discussing Khagga Visana Sutta, which is available in Sutta Nipata. Sutta Nipata is one of the early Buddhist texts available in the canon, and it belongs to the Sutta Pitaka. And it is considered one of the very interesting and very profound teaching of the Buddha is included in this particular book. So very popular suttas like Ratana Sutta, Mangala Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, all are in this Sutta Nipata. And similarly, this Khagga Visana Sutta is also available in this Sutta Nipata. Now, in this particular sutta, Khagga Visana Sutta, literally, it can be translated as rhinoceros horn. It very much emphasizes the secluded practice. Rhinoceros horn is a single one. It doesn't have several horns, but it's a single horn. And it's a very strong and very steady single horn. So that represents the secluded practice of a monk or a practitioner who actually trying to be alone and trying to make use of the time as much as possible. And that secluded practice is fairly emphasized throughout this rhinoceros horn sutta, or Khagga Visana Sutta. And it actually consists of around 40 verses. And the commentary says, Buddha mentioned all these 40 verses as kind of explanation of Paccheka Buddha's enlightenment. There are three stages of enlightenment mentioned in the Dhamma. That is Sammasambuddha, fully enlightened, self-enlightened Buddha, who actually self-enlightened as well as established the Sangha and preached the Dhamma in length and capable of teaching to many. On the other hand, there is another level, that is the Paccheka Buddha, sometimes translated as private Buddha, where he too is self-enlightened, but he doesn't establish Sangha order, and only he can't actually preach to many so that many would understand Dhamma. So that is the Paccheka Buddha. Next one is the Sravaka Buddha, who is a follower of a Sammasambuddha. So he has the teaching of the Sammasambuddha, so he follows it, practices it, and similarly try to explain it to the other person. So his skills actually vary from person to person, and certain monks, followers are capable of explaining, some are not. So that actually differences are there. Now, the Paccheka Buddhas have some reason for them to utter these various verses. And in this 51st verse available in the Sutta Nipata, so again, interesting story is there. So in that story, what happened was, one king, so he was having a kingdom and he is dwelling in that kingdom. Unfortunately, he got a boil, and that boil has become really worse, and he has shown it to the physicians, and they tried various medicine, but he didn't cure. And so they said that he has to go through a surgery. Now it's a kind of a dangerous thing, but anyway, they said that without such surgery, you can't survive. Then king allowed to do that. And these physicians, they did the surgery. And they actually cut the boil and removed the pus. And they have applied various medicines. And they asked the king to behave well so that the boil will be completely cured. Now the king actually followed their instructions. And as a result of that, the boil completely disappeared. And during that ill's time, during this disease time, actually the king couldn't eat all the, say, delicious food because he has to follow the instructions of the physicians. So they only allowed him to eat very raw food, which is more conducive for the treatment. Anyway, King followed their instructions and he became well, but his body somewhat become lean and not that beautiful because he ate raw food. Once the boil has cured, he started to eat all delicious food. And ultimately, after some time, again he got the boil. Now again, he has shown it to the physicians. And again, they recommended him to go through the surgery. Again, King went through the surgery and similarly instructions were given. And he was fully recovered. And during that time, he ate raw food. And once he recovered, he again started to take delicious food. And again, he got the boil. So likewise, three times it happened. And so the king got really somewhat disillusioned or somewhat disappointed about this body, because it's again and again giving much trouble. So it's very much like a cancer. So he has treated for a cancer. And during that time, he maintained his all the diet properly so that he got cured. But after some time, when he reverted back to the normal schedule, again he got the cancer. Now again he went through treatment, again followed the dietary restrictions, and again he cured. But once he get back to the normal meals, again he got the cancer. So somewhat like that. So these are not distant from us. So these are quite ordinary things happen to many people. And once they follow the instructions and once they go through medication, the whatever the boil or cancer or whatever it is, that disease get cured. But after some time, again, it can happen. So same thing happened to this king. And he got really disappointed about this situation happens in the body. As a result of that, he thought to give up the kingdom. So he left the kingdom and he went forth, became a monk, and he started to practice. And he practiced for a long time. It is mentioned in the commentary, he practiced for 7 years. And at the end of 7 years, he was able to become a Paccheka Buddha. So after he became the Paccheka Buddha, he has uttered this verse. Itica dandocha upaddavocha rogocha sallancha bhayancha meta etam bhayam kama gune suddhiswa eko chare khagga visana kappo. So this is the verse he has uttered. So it is translated into English by Bhikkhu Bodhi. This is adversity, a boil, a disaster, an illness, a dart, and peril for me. Now he is talking about the various sensual pleasures. Now he is considering all these sensual pleasures as an adversity, as a boil, as a disaster, as an illness, as a dart, and a peril. Having seen this peril in this strands of sensual pleasure, eko chare kagga visana kappo, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. Now, this verse is very much connected with the Vipassana practice, because one has to look at the body in a different angle. So typically, we have a lot of attachment towards the body, and we consider our body is quite beautiful, quite strong. I am the prettiest person. I am the strongest person. So we have a lot of attachment to this body, and we identify with it. And again, we are proud of it. So likewise, we hold the body strongly. So we have a lot of ego build up because of this body. So if we are quite beautiful, pretty, smart, skillful, various medals were won. So likewise, because of this body, if we have a lot of things to be admired, so then we become quite proud and we identify with the body. But the opposite happens with the practice. There are different practices are recommended by the Buddha. Suppose you have kind of a strong desire towards your body or strong desire towards another one's body. So then practicing Asubha Bhavana is one aspect, one level where you are trying to reduce the arisen lust. Say you have a lot of lustful thoughts available in the mind and you have recognized that mind is going on thinking various fantasies, and you understood that every day you are burning with lust. So if you want to find out a solution, one option available is going through some loathsomeness, understanding the loathsomeness of the body. Probably you may understand certain pictures through images, through videos, or you can go to a mortuary and look at the dead bodies. So likewise, so this is one aspect, one level, one method one can use to understand the loathsomeness of the body. Because if one removes the skin, so the internal organs are quite unattractive. So you will understand it is not an interesting thing. Even though I call it like beautiful, it only depends on several angstroms. So if we are able to remove few angstroms of the skin, then you understand it's a utterly disgusting kind of a picture, disgusting kind of an image what you have. It's not at all attractive. And the other way to do it is to sort of dissect the body and recognize various body parts. So it is also connected to the Asubha Bhavana, and you are dissecting the body. So various anatomical parts are there. And Buddha starts with very basic ones, easy to understand. Head hair, body hair, teeth, skin, flesh. So likewise, various body parts are there. And slowly he takes us to the middle or to the inside of the body. There we understand various body parts. So idea is to understand that this body is not an attractive something. Rather, it's a combination of various body parts. It's an assembly of various body parts. Similarly, that assume that you are having a car, and if you dismantle it, if you break everything into pieces, remove different parts, then you have a collection of parts. So this collection, once you put it in order, in a particular style, fashion, in a proper order, then we call it a car. So similarly, this body consists of various body parts, and once they are organized in a particular way, we call it as a male body, as a female body, as a child, as a youth, as an old man. So likewise, we give various names. And this is the real situation. So this is another level of recognizing the body parts and the situation, real situation of the body. So that is also one level of understanding. That is also quite useful, because we typically have the idea of compactness to this body. So as a result of that, we always recognize this body as something. Something, a kind of a unit, a single thing. So when you see a single thing, it is quite easy to get attached to it. And you can't see various body parts. Rather, you see as a person, and we give various names to that person. And we have various pictures, videos about that person, and we more and more recognize an individual there. So we have this self-view. But through the practice, actually, we are able to break it to some extent by dissecting the body into various parts. Various body parts are there. And once you have come to that understanding, you may see that it is not a single thing, rather it's a collection of various body parts. Now, understanding that is also quite useful, and then you probably can go to the next level, that is to understand various element characteristics. So far, actually, what we did is somewhat conceptual, because even though we call them as body parts, so still we are dealing with the conceptual level, but still it is quite strong and very worth. But in the element characteristics, in the Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation, one can go even deeper. So what one do is to understand various element characteristics while the body is moving, while the body is standing, while the body is lying down, and while the body is sitting. So there is no any particular posture recommended for elements meditation, because throughout every day, every moment, the body consists of all the various types of elements. So one can recognize all element characteristics at any posture. So while walking, you are trying to recognize element characteristics. While sitting, you are trying to recognize various element characteristics. But unfortunately, it is not that straightforward, because our mind cannot recognize these element characteristics easily, because mind is somewhat restless. It is not one-pointed. So therefore, we need to, first of all, prepare our mind with necessary skills. Say, for example, you go through some anapanasati meditation, you do some rising and falling meditation, so that you are developing those skills. And as a result of such practice, now assume that your mind is staying with the breath or staying with rising and falling for a long time and with less distractions. And now you understand, okay, fair amount of concentration has built up. So, and fair amount of mindfulness is also available. So when such skills are available, now you can try to recognize various element characteristics. Suppose now you are doing some walking meditation, and say your mind properly stay with various bodily movements. Your leg is moving up, is moving forward, moving down. And once it is placed, there are various characteristics are felt. And all these different characteristics, now we have to recognize. Now we have a very quiet mind, concentrated mind. And with such mind, now we are trying to recognize various element characteristics. So these element characteristics are very ordinary and more primary, very fundamental. So therefore, we easily miss them. We easily don't recognize them, because we live on top of that in a very conceptual world. Now we have to penetrate all this conceptual world, and we have to come back to that very ordinary fundamental characteristics. So that is the difficulty, because we love to be in this conceptual world and doing a lot of conceptual proliferation, and we are very much entangled in that world. But here, in order to recognize element characteristics, we have to let go of all those conceptual proliferation, thinking, and we have to calm down the mind, concentrate the mind, and such concentrated mind, we should recognize various primary elementary characteristics. So those elementary characteristics are somewhat, according to the Dhamma, it's mentioned mainly the four elements are there: earth element, water element, air element, and the water element, and the fire element. So the characteristics of earth element, one can recognize as roughness, smoothness, hardness, softness, then heaviness or weight, and the lightness. So around six characteristics are there. And then the water, fluidity, cohesion. So these are the water characteristics. And then the fire had, or the heat has two characteristics, cold and heat. And the air have certain characteristics like movement, holding, and these are air characteristics. Now, in order to understand these very basic primary characteristics, one has to carefully observe all these movements and touching sensations, everything one has to carefully observe. Suppose you are trying to recognize all these things while walking. At the beginning, probably you can only recognize a couple of characteristics, maybe hardness of the, carpet, hardness of the mat, or hardness of the floor,
or hardness of the sand flow. So likewise, you may understand the very easy or evident characteristics at the beginning. With that, you are establishing mindfulness, and once that mindfulness has sharpened, now you try to recognize other characteristics as well. Is it only the hardness available? Now you are trying to recognize smoothness as well. Now you are trying to recognize roughness, trying to recognize, say, softness, heaviness, movement, maybe heat, cold. So likewise, slowly now you are using your mind to recognize all these refined characteristics. So as a result of that, what happens? Now you are more and more understanding many element characteristics, not only in walking, maybe while sitting, while lying down, while standing. So everywhere now you are able to recognize element characteristics. Now your perception actually changed, because several months ago, once you started your practice, so you had a notion of individual. So I am meditating, I am walking, I am sitting. So that was the perception we had. Now when you start to observe various element characteristics, now element characteristics become more and more evident, and you may understand, okay, I mean, there can't be a person here. Only various elements are there, and those elements manifest. And they happen. And they also happen not according to my agenda, according to my schedule. So they happen according to their own agenda. And there are various causes and conditions. As a result of that, many different element characteristics occur. And once they occur, I don't have any control. And they happen, and they sometimes exist, and sometimes they quickly pass away. And probably once you are closely examining, probably one can understand, okay, even though it appear like kind of element characteristic, once I am closely observing them, it is a bunch of characteristics, a combination of so many characteristics. It's not a single unit, rather there are also many characteristics are there. So likewise, you are refining your mindfulness, sharpening your mindfulness, and you are trying to clearly recognize all these minute characteristics. So you are sharpening your clear comprehension. So this leads to more and more understanding, and you understand internally what is available in this body is nothing but elements. And similarly, outside also what is available is nothing but elements. So slowly dispassion happens in the mind, and you lose grasping. And now you are able to look at the body not as something compact, but as kind of a combination of so many, say, objects or so many characteristics. So that actually reduces grasping, attachment towards the body. So a lot of conceit may have reduced, because now you can't comprehend the body as something, a unit, a kind of a thing, a kind of something belong to you as an individual. Rather, it's a combination of or manifestation of so many element characteristics, and they are very vulnerable. They are constantly changing. They are coming and going. So your perception, your understanding slowly growing, and now you understand not only element characteristics, they have their common behavior. They are quite impermanent. Constantly they are changing. And they are constantly subjected to this changing, arising and passing away. And they don't behave according to my wishes. And even they don't know, I mean, whether they are in a female body or male body or in a table or chair or whatever it is. So all those are conventions, characteristics or elements doesn't know, I mean, where they are. So is this all these notions, conventions are what we made, humans have made. But elements doesn't know any of those. Elements are merely elements. So you understand there is no animal here, there is no being here, there is no human here. nothing but elements. So your perception has drastically changed, and now your grasping, your upadana clinging has fairly reduced. As a result of that, probably your mind gets freed. As you've seen this behavior of the elements. So this is one of the decisive point of the Dhatu Manasikara, where once you are recognizing everything is nothing but elements, so this compactness of the body may disappear. And you can't now perceive the body as something with a boundary, but everything very much like scattered. You can't have a boundary now. Previously, through in your practice, probably once you pay your attention to the body, you can recognize kind of a boundary to the body. But as your practice growing, you can't recognize such boundary. So what you recognize is a kind of a manifestation of various element characteristics, and you can't perceive a boundary of the body. And things are subjected to various arising and passing away, and you can't have things under your control. So the three universal characteristics, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self, are growing in your mind. And once they are substantially grown, probably your mind may release the body, or mind may let go of the body, and probably mind get freed. So at that time, if your mind does not grasp any kind of feeling, any kind of perception, or any kind of mental object, so then it may get a kind of a temporary release. So this temporary release also one has to improve or prolong in order to have a kind of a considerable understanding of a released mind. So the practice has to continue for a long time so that one becomes skillful in maintaining such a free mind. So he may have it during the sitting, he may experience it during the walking. So likewise, he has to expand it so that his mind is no more grasping any of these sensual cords, five sensual cords. So likewise, this vipassana practice related to the body has a kind of a long journey. It may start with simply having some understanding about the body and dissecting the body to various bodily parts. And even beyond that, one may understand this is element characteristics. And then using which one may reduce one's clinging, desire, attachment, and so that it may lead to kind of unattached, unbound, freed mind. So this is in a way some destination of the practice, but that is not the end, and one has to further cultivate such unattached mind, free mind, using which one may recognize various defilements available in the mind. And what are the attachments further available in the mind, various tendencies available in the mind. So likewise, now one may even go towards the mental side or the mind's aspects, various feelings, various, say, formations, various mental qualities. So one may understand more and more subtle aspects of the mind. So likewise, it's a kind of an understanding of mind and body, and so such understanding fairly helps one to free one's mind, not to attach with the body, with the feelings, with the perceptions, with various formations, so that one's mind become more and more unburdened, relaxed, free, lighter, spacious, unattached, so that, as Buddha mentioned, once one may experience some kind of a freedom and reduction of sorrow, lamentation, suffering, etc. So this is what we can understand through this verse. So this Paccheka Buddha has understood various sensual cords Panchakama has with their disadvantages, and he has understood their danger, their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. And with such understanding, he was able to completely liberate his mind and was able to become a Paccheka Buddha. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Abhisrai Bhante, currently there are 7 questions. Question number 1, general question. Dear Bhante, this question is related to establishing mindfulness in all occasions, including sitting and walking. I notice when a Vedana is present, automatically a story starts getting constructed. Also, I remember as a child, when I experienced a Vedana, it does not have a story as now. And my understanding is that it's probably because as a child, there isn't much sanya in the mind. Bhante, my question is, would you please be able to share some practical solutions to prevent the entanglement of sanya or construction of story with Vedana? In other words, to experience the Vedana as Vedana without any, I think the word is either delusion or dilution. Greatly appreciated and much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, so as we discuss even today, so if we are able to understand feeling as feeling without mentally proliferating on top of that, so that is much necessary, much required in the vipassana practice. So that is in the way the practice of Vedananupassana. Various feelings are there. There may be pleasurable feelings, equanimous feelings, painful feelings, and they come and go. And you are able to step back and look at them. And you are not identifying with them, and you are not claiming them as my feelings. So they are merely feelings. So this is, in a way, very much like that perspective, how we are looking at them. So, for example, in the Kayanupassana, suppose you are recognizing rising and falling. So the abdomen rises and abdomen falls. So you are keeping your attention closer to the abdomen and you are able to understand how this abdominal movement happens. And you are like an outsider. You have stepped back and you do kind of a distant observation. Body go through this movement, rising and falling, and you are able to look at it objectively without claiming this rising and falling as me or mine. So similarly, the same kind of perspective we have to maintain when we are watching various feelings. There are various pleasurable feelings are happening and you are looking at them objectively. There are various painful feelings are happening and we are look at them objectively. There are various equanimous feelings are happening and we are look at them objectively. So this understanding has to grow. So as we discussed today with elements meditation, so in the Vedananupassana, the similar fashion is there. So at the beginning, you understand as a single feeling. It lasts for some time, maybe several minutes. But as your clear comprehension improves, your mindfulness sharpens, there you understand it is not a single feeling, but rather it is a combination of so many feelings. It's a group of feelings. And each minute feeling now you are able to recognize and to understand how transient it is. So likewise, it's also growing. Your understanding also improves. So likewise, if you are able to understand that nature, then you understand this kind of common characteristics are available with pleasurable feelings, available with painful feelings, and available with equanimous feelings. So it's a common thing. I mean, we from outside consider it as a pleasurable feeling or painful feeling, equanimous feeling, but internally, the mechanism is very much similar. Combination of many minute feelings are there, group of feelings are there, and they quickly arise and pass away. But the resultant we interpret as a pleasurable feeling, painful feeling, equanimous feeling. So more and more one understand it. So one's grasping towards these feelings become less and less Now they probably even start to disappear, or their differences start to disappear, and you mostly probably look at them like all of them have become fairly equanimous, not much pressurable, not much painful. All of them very much have become equanimous. So that is how the perception may grow, change. And as a result of that, the grasping may happen. So things are, I mean, very practical, and you have to go through this practice. Then only one may be able to have a kind of a distant look to various feelings. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. General question. Dear Bhante, would you kindly be able to explain the below terms? So there's 3 terms. They appear very similar to each other. Number 1, Sanchetana. Number 2, Vitakka. Number 3, Vichara. Much merits and appreciation with Metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, Sanchetana, Chetana. So this typically translated as volition. So there we purposely, deliberately, we are thinking, we are doing, we are talking. So this deliberate activity, one can say as the Chetana. And Vitakka is very much like just simply, it is more, say, refined than Chetana. Because Chetana, we can say, somewhat gross compared with Vitakka. Vitakka, some we call as, translated as applied mind. Say, you are again and again applying your mind to a particular object. Say, for example, you do metta meditation, then you are applying your mind again and again to a particular person. May I be well. So likewise, you do again and again. Or else, suppose you are doing anapanasati, you are applying your mind again and again to the breath. But Chetana is also involved. So Chetana also, suppose when you are sitting to meditate anapanasati, you have that major intention. So I want to practice anapanasati. So that is the major Chetana, major intention. And when you are practicing anapanasati during the session, so each and every breath happens, and at that time you have to put your mind to the each and every breath. So there is a subtle Chetana, they are also involved, because you have an intention to pay attention to that object. So Chetana is also involved, but in a very subtle level. I mean, the just not such a gross Chetana that you had to begin practice, but now while during the practice, to each and every breath, in order to pay attention, also you have slight Chetana. And when you are applying your mind again and again to the object, so that is called applied mind, Vitakka. And Chetana is not only applying mind, you have to keep your mind there. You have to observe, examine the breath. So that examining part, keeping your mind there for close supervision. So that is called vichara. So you are sustained attention. You are sustaining your attention on breath for a certain period of time. So you are sustaining your attention on the breath, vichara. You are applying again and again mind to the breath, vitakka. And this whole thing you are continuing, and in order to continue that, you are purposely making it, purposely doing it, and that is because of the Chetana intention that you have. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 8. This one is a general question. Dear Bhante, I heard the term Rajoharam. Does that make sense, Bhante?
Yes.
Okay. On Saturday Dhamma talk, what does that mean? With Metta, that's the end of the question.
So I think it is given to Chullapanthaka, as far as I can remember, because when Venerable Chullapanthaka was expelled from the monastery, and there Buddha recognized his potential, and then he asked him to come back to the monastery, and he has given a piece of clean cloth, maybe white cloth, to Venerable Chullapanthaka, and Buddha asked him to touch it and call Rajoharanam, Rajoharanam, Rajoharanam. So as he continued that, so this is kind of a very slight kamatahan meditation instruction. So Chullapantaka's mind was fairly concentrated and the task assigned is very simple. He has to do it repeatedly, mind getting more and more concentrated. At the same time, since he's rubbing this clean cloth by his hand, this cloth become more and more dirty. Its color has become discolored. Now the impermanence is understood by Venerable Chullapantaka. So at that time, Buddha has given instructions and as a result of that, he was able to become enlightened. So Rajaharanang is very much like, I think I can't remember the exact translation of that particular term, but the occasion is this where Buddha is giving such an instruction to Venerable Chullapantaka. So it is very much like a mantra where your mind being concentrated so that you are, since you are repeating that particular term, and not only that, you are rubbing the cloth, and as a result of that, it is getting dirty, and you take it as a sign so that your mind understand the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and that make use of that, Buddha explained Dhamma, and he became enlightened. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 8. This one is a general question. Dear Bhante, what are the 5 class beings that cause suffering according to the line Panchapanas Upadanaskanda Dukkha? Would you please be able to give some examples of those 5? Greatly appreciated and much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Chathu, can you repeat the first statement?
Yeah. Dear Bhante, what are the 5 class beings that cause suffering? Yeah.
Yeah, we are grasping 5 khandas. I mean, there are 5 khandas: rupa khanda, vedana khanda, sanya khanda, sankhara khanda, vijnana khanda. Rupa khanda is the form, material form. Vedana khanda is the various feelings. Sanya khanda is various perceptions, signs. And sankhara khanda are various formations. Say you have loving kindness, you have faith, you have various mental qualities, say hate, delusion, lust, and all different kinds of mental qualities are there. So probably you may grasp them, and various knowings are there. Say you are grasping when you are seeing something, when you are hearing something, you are tasting something, cognizing something. So that very knowing part also can be grasped. So these 5 aggregates can be grasped. So they are the mind constantly grasping either one of them or many of them. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 8. This one is a practice question. Dear Venerable Sir, my mindful practice is walking 1 hour and sitting 1 hour, where the sitting starts with the focus on the breath. I have submitted multiple reports and received excellent advice from you in the past. And thank you so much for this valuable service. I don't have major concerns on my practice, which is progressing quite well. With the walking, I tend to get to a state where the difference between the left and the right leg disappears within 5 to 10 minutes, and the walking happens automatically for the rest of the time. The primary objects I come across are several elemental characteristics during this time, which I've explained in the report last time. During sitting, my breath fades away within 5 to 10 minutes, and I come to the spacious awareness, observing the thoughts come and go, as well as the elemental characteristics sometimes. I feel calm and serene after each walking and sitting practice. However, during day-to-day mindfulness, I observe that my emotions are triggering the explosive levels sometimes. There are impulsive moments, and I can observe that they dissipate quite quickly as well. For example, I tend to get frustrated and angry about situations more often and more quickly with more intensity than before, and I am aware of it. I can see these dissipate quickly as well. A few weeks back, Bhante mentioned that this is the way and the path of getting rid of these. by face-to-face observation and recognition using mindfulness. Sometimes I have doubts in my mind that if I am capable to do that right now. I don't know, perhaps I should pay attention to my body and the changes in the body. For example, rising heart rate, sweating, jaw tightening, and avoid face-to-face recognition of these emotions since they are so explosive. Maybe I should continue observing these thoughts directly, even though I feel like helpless and intimidated by them. Seeking your valuable guidance, thank you for your kind advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, nothing much to add. So basically, you are doing well. So, I mean, if you are able to recognize various emotions, that is well and good. So, I mean, let them come. So no need to suppress them. So let them come, but you are not being governed by them. You are not being fooled by them. So you are able to recognize them objectively. So that is how slowly we are sort of not becoming a slave to different emotions. And we don't need to suppress those emotions. And very much like we are having some sort of a literacy towards those emotions, kind of understanding, emotional intelligence towards those emotions. So we understand, okay, when we get angry, we understand. When mind becomes lustful, we understand. When mind becomes, say, jealous, we understand. When mind becomes somewhat miserly, one may understand. So likewise, different emotions may understand. So as we are growing, or rather understanding them more and more, so their power loosens and you no more become a slave to those emotions. And you are able to understand them very in their very early stages. So during their inception level, you are able to understand different emotions. So ultimately, instead of emotions, they become feelings. I mean, it may be a pleasurable feeling, it may be a painful feeling, equanimous feeling. So you are now very much like diluting these emotions. And now they are not overpowering, overwhelming, and you are become more comfortable, and mind remains in a more calmness because it is not being governed by various emotions. And that is how it may grow. It may take definitely time, but we have to patiently observe. And as you have mentioned, rather than suppressing them, so let them come up and let them be. And we are observing and let them go. Since we are not promoting them, or we are strengthening them, and they are loosening their strength, they are weakening, and they become faded away. And that actually helps ourselves to have a fairly stable mind. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 8. This is a question about the Dhamma sermon. Bhante, regarding the elemental characteristics explained during the Dhamma sermon, until this time, my understanding was observing lightness and heaviness is air element. I did not know that it is earth element characteristics. However, I could clearly recognize and observe these characteristics during sitting and walking practice after the mind settles and the primary object vanishes. Is there a problem in this that the naming is different, but you still feel or observe them? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, we are the ones who have categorized those, and it is typically mentioned lightness, heaviness belong to the earth characteristics or the earth element, and the air element actually have the movement, especially. So the movement, vibrations, so those are belonging to the air element, while the lightness, heaviness, hardness, softness, smoothness, roughness, so those belong to the earth characteristics. But during the practice, we are not supposed to map them. So don't think that you have to map them correctly to the exact element. So it's a matter of observing different element characteristics. You don't need to bring any book knowledge here. So that is why you are growing in a way. Because, I mean, if you have forgotten to which element they belong to, it doesn't matter, because the important thing is to experience these element characteristics and to understand them, recognize them, and to understand in the sense, understanding their behavior, how these different element characteristics behaving. It doesn't matter to which element they belong to, but they are showing same kind of behavior. So that is the beauty of the practice. So it doesn't matter whether it is earth element or water element or fire element or air element, they all have their common behavior. So ultimately, what we are trying to understand is those common characteristics or common behavior. So therefore, nothing to worry. So even though you have misunderstood, there was no error in terms of the experience.
Question number 7 of 8. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, when in sitting meditation, I was led to an emptiness-like status. Continued to be in that empty status, and then various pointers, sound or mind-driven, seemed to manifest various life situations through projections of the mind. I felt this is like seeing a dream. After finishing the sitting meditation and looking back at this experience, I felt this is what we go through in the Samuti world, I think.
Yeah,
meeting.
Yeah.
Our original state of mind is pure and free of any manifestation. Different pointers and senses taking over us and lead us to manifestation of different life situations and make them mine or ours, carrying us away in the samsara. Is this what we need to continue to practice and experience in going through this path to Nibbana? Many merits, there one sarana. That's the end of the question.
Can you repeat, Chato, the first part?
Yeah. When in sitting meditation, I was led to an emptiness-like status. Continued to be in that empty status, and then various pointers, sound or mind-driven, seemed to manifest various life situations through projections of the mind. I felt this is like seeing a dream. After finishing the sitting meditation, looking back at this experience, I felt that this is what we go through in the Samvati world.
Right. Okay. So I think this is very much like sanya, various perceptions, because once your mind fully calmed down, so the consciousness can't or don't have much place to establish. So what happened is, so it takes all these different maybe past memories or your own projections, plans, wishes to the mind, to the surface of the mind, and they may be quite interesting, and ultimately the consciousness go and establish there, go and attach to them, and we are trying to give various interpretations to them. So that is in a way kind of bait of the Mara, where he's trying to fool ourselves. And Buddha mentioned various perceptions are like a mirage. So they appear like something important. They appear like something representing, but they are merely perceptions. They are merely signs. And you don't need to give any interpretations to them. You simply let them go. So the understanding, it is depending on this emptiness rather than various perceptions happen in the mind, various such, can't say they are hallucinations, very much like different images. When they are happening in the mind, we don't need to give any importance to them. We don't need to interpret them. Simply let them go. So when we are trying to interpret them, in a way, we are giving some emphasis to them. That is not at all necessary. So what we have to give emphasis is the kind of emptiness of the mind, the silence of the mind. And that is also, it's not that simply by being in this silence, being in this emptiness that you become fully enlightened. Rather, I mean, while being there with a very relaxed mind, let those different, thoughts, images, perceptions come, and you, without grasping, without giving any interpretation, you are simply letting go. So then what is available in the mind is nothing but the kind of purity, kind of a simple awareness. So this simple awareness is something that we have to trust. In a way, it is kind of an effortless type of mindfulness. So this effortless kind of mindfulness is something that we have to trust. or something that we have to dwell in. So that is, that may take us into more and more understanding and to recognize various subtle defilements available in the mind, so that our mind become more and more pure. So that should be the path that we have to follow.
Question number 8, this is the last one. There's two parts, mindful walking and sitting. They're both short, so I'll just read them both out. Mindful walking. Only 10 minutes of practice and about 300 steps on a tile floor. Smoothness of the floor, movement of the legs, and touching sensation of the different parts of the foot could be observed. Various past and future thoughts are coming and going. Mindful sitting. 30 minutes according to the instructions of Swami Mahansa. 50 to 60 breaths could be recognized. Sensations of the body in different places could be observed. That's the end of the report.
Yeah, you may continue because now you are able to understand them as maybe sensations, as different breaths or different whatever it is. So it is very much like you are able to look at them objectively. So that is the important thing. So rather than identifying them as me, mine, etc., now you are able to step back and watch them like someone else's sensations. So that is the important thing. You are learning it and you got to continue. Yeah.
That was the last question, so we can finish up.
Okay.
I'd first like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program and also pass on our merits and dedication to you. Secondly, I'd like to also thank the people working with
Can I offer you some water?
I don't know anymore. Thank you, Bhante. Working behind the scenes tirelessly, and also those seen and unseen participating. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. There are ones out there.
Yeah, actually, I like to thank you also, Chatu. You are also take part in the program for a long time now and presenting all the questions. And we appreciate your work as well. Okay, thank you very much for everyone.
Everyone's online.
Everyone's online. Everyone's online.